my attention that your slave girl has become literate. Do not think to deny it, as she wrote a number of words on the muddy ground in the yard, and even took care to sign her name. Oh, Handful, no! I looked away from his harsh, accusing eyes, trying to arrange things into perspective. Handful had been careless. We'd been found out. But my disbelieving mind could not accept that Father, of all people, believed her ability to read was an unpardonable offense. He would chastise me as he must, undoubtedly at Mother's urging. Then he would soften. In the depths of his conscience, he understood what I'd done.
How do you suppose she acquired this ability?
He asked calmly.
Did it descend upon her one day out of the blue? Was she born with it? Did she teach her own ingenious self to read?
Of course, we know how the girl came to read.
You taught her. You defied your mother, your father, the laws of your state, even your rector, who expressly admonished you about it.
He rose from his leather chair and walked toward me, stopping at arm's reach. And when he spoke again, some of the hostility had left his voice.
I've asked myself how you are able to disobey with such ease and disregard. I fear the answer is you are a coddled girl who does not understand her place in the world, and that is partly my own fault. I've done you no favors with my lenience. My indulgence has given you the idea you can transgress a serious boundary such as this one.
Feeling the chill of some new and different terror, I dared to speak, and felt my throat clench in the familiar old way. I squeezed my eyes and forced out my thought. I'm sorry, Father. I meant no harm.
No harm?
He hadn't noticed the return of my stammer. He paced about the stuffy room and lectured me, while Mr. Washington gazed serenely from the mantel.
You think there's no detriment in a slave learning to read? There are sad truths in our world, and one is that slaves who read are a threat. They would be abreast of news that would incite them in ways we could not control. Yes, it's unfair to deprive them, but there's a greater good here that must be protected.
But, Father, it's wrong, I cried.
Are you so impudent as to challenge me even now? When you left the document on my desk, freeing your slave girl, I should have brought you to your senses then and there. But I cosseted you. I thought by tearing the fool thing in two and returning it to you, you would understand we Grimkeys do not subvert the institutions and laws by which we live, even if we don't agree with them.
I felt confused and very stupid. Father had torn up my manumission paper. Father?
Do not mistake me, Sarah. I will protect our way of life. I will not tolerate sedition in this family.
When I espoused my anti-slavery views during those dinner-table debates, Father beaming and spurring me on, I'd thought he prized my position. I'd thought he shared my position. But it hit me suddenly that I'd been the collared monkey dancing to his master's accordion. Father had been amusing himself. Or perhaps he'd encouraged my dissenting opinion only because it gave the rest of them a way to sharpen their own opposing views. Perhaps he'd tolerated my notions because the debates had been a pitying oral exercise to help a defective daughter speak. Father crossed his arms over his white shirt and stared at me from beneath the unclipped hedge of his brows. His eyes were clear and brown and empty of compassion. And that's when I first saw my father as he really was. A man who valued principle over love.
You have quite literally committed a crime, he said, and resumed his pacing, making a wide, slow orbit around me. I will not punish you accordingly, but you must learn, Sarah. From now on, you are denied entrance to this room, You shall not cross this threshold at any time, day or night. You are denied all access to the books here, and to any other books wherever they might be, except for those Madam Ruffin has allotted to your studies.
No books. God, please. My legs gave way then, and I went onto my knees. He kept circling.
You will study nothing but Madam's approved subjects. No more Latin sessions with Thomas. You will not write it, speak it, or compose it in your head. Do you understand?
I lifted my hands, palms up, as high as my head, molding myself into the shape of a supplicant. Father, I beg you, please don't take books from me. I can't bear it.
You have no need of books, Sarah.
Father! He strode back to his desk.
It causes me distress to see your misery, Sarah. But it's fait accompli. Try not to take it so hard.
From the window came the rumble of drays and carriages, the cries of slave vendors on the street. The old woman with the basket atop her head who squawked,
"Red rose tomatoes!"
The din of commerce went on without regard. Opening the library door, I saw Binna had waited. She took my hand and led me up the stairs to the doorway of my room.
"I'll get you some breakfast and bring it up here on a tray," she said.
After she left, I peered beneath the bed where I'd kept the slate board, spellers, and primer. They were gone. The books on my desk were gone, too. My room had been scoured. It was not until Benner returned with the tray that I thought to ask,
"Where's Handful?"
"Oh, Miss Sarah, that just it. She about to get her own punishing out back."
I have no memory of my feet grazing the stairs.
"It just one lash,"
Benner cried, racing behind me.
"One lash, Mrs. C. That be all."
I flung open the back door. My eyes swept the yard. Handful's skinny arms were tied to the porch rail of the kitchen house. 10 paces behind her, Tomfrey held a strap and stared at the ground. Charlotte stood in the wheel ruts that cut from the carriage house to the back gate, while the rest of the slaves clustered beneath the oak. Tomfrey raised his arm.
"No!"
I screamed.
"No!"
He turned toward me, hesitating, and relief filled his face. Then I heard Mother's cane tap the glass on the upstairs window, and Tomfrey lifted his tired eyes toward the sound. He nodded and brought the lash down across Handful's back.
Handful. Tomfrey said he tried not to put much force in it, but the strike flayed open my skin. Miss Sarah made a poultice with balm of Gilead buds soaked in Master Grimke's rum, and Mama handed the whole flask to me and said, "Here, go on, drink it too." I don't hardly remember the pain. The gash healed fast, but Miss Sarah's hurt got worse and worse. Her voice had gone back to stalling and she pined for her books. That was one wretched girl. It'd been Lucy who ran telling to Miss Mary about my lettering under the tree, and Miss Mary had run telling to Mrs. I judged Lucy to be stupid, but she was only weak-willed and wanted to get in good with Miss Mary. I never did forgive her, and I don't know if Miss Sarah forgave her sister, because what came from all that snitching turned the tide on Miss Sarah's life, her studying was over and done. My reading lessons were over, too. I had my 100 words, and I figured out a good many more just using my wits. Now and then, I said my ABCs for Mama and read words to her off the picture pages she tacked on her wall. One day I went to the cellar, and Mama was making a baby gown from muslin with lilac bands. She saw my face and said, "That's right, another Grimke coming. Sometime this winter, Mrs. ain't happy about it. I heard her tell Massa that's it. Just the last one." When Mama finished hemming the little gown, She dug in the gunny sack and pulled out a short stack of clean paper, a half-full inkwell, and a quill pen, and I knew she'd stole every one of these things. I said, "Why you keep doing this?" "I need you to write something." "Write, Charlotte Grimke has permission for traveling." Under that, put the month, leave off the day, and sign Mary Grimke with some curly Q. First off, I don't know how to write Charlotte. I don't know the word permission either. Then write, "This slave is allowed for travel." "What are you going to do with it?" She smiled, showing me the gap in her front teeth. "This slave going to travel. But don't worry, she always coming back." "What are you going to do when a white man stops you and asks to see your pass and it looks like some 11-year-old wrote it?" "Then you best write it like you ain't some 11-year-old. How you plan on getting past the wall?" She looked up at the window near the ceiling. It wasn't big as a hatbox. I didn't see how she could wriggle through it, but she would grease herself with goose fat if that's what it took. I wrote her pass because she was bent on hell to have it. After that, at least one or two afternoons a week, she took off. Stayed gone from middle of the afternoon till past dark. Wouldn't say where she went. Wouldn't say how she got in and out of the yard. I worked out her escape path in my head, though. Outside her window, it wasn't but a couple of feet between the house and the wall, and I figured once she squeezed through the window, she would press her back against the house and her feet against the wall and shimmy up and over, dropping to the ground on the other side. Of course, she had to find another way back in. My guess was the back gate where the carriage came and went. She never came back till it was good and dark so she could climb it and nobody see. She always made it before the drums beat for curfew. I didn't want to think of her out there hiding from the city guard. One afternoon, while me and Mama were finishing up the slave clothes for the year, I laid out my reasoning, how she went out the window in daylight and came back over the gate at dark. She said, "Well, ain't you smart?" In the far back of my head, I could see her with the strap tied on her ankle and round her neck. And I filled up and started begging, "Don't do it no more, please. All right, you're gonna get yourself caught. I tell you what, you can help me. If somebody here find me missing, you sit the pail next to the cistern where I can see it from the back gate. You do that for me." This scared me worse. "And if you see it, what you gonna do? Run off? Just leave me?" Then I broke down. She rubbed my shoulders the way she always liked to do. "Handful, child. I would soon die before I leave you. You know that. If that pail sit by the cistern, that just helped me know what's coming, that's all." When their social season was starting off again, and me and Mama couldn't keep up with all the gowns and frocks, she up and hired herself out without permission. I learned it one day after the supper meal, while we were standing in the middle of the workyard. Miss Sarah had been in one of her despairs all day, and I thought the worst things I had to fret over was how low she got and Mama slipping out the window. But Mama, she pulled a slave badge out from her pocket. If some owner hired his slave out, he had to buy a badge from the city. And I knew Master Grimke hadn't bought any such. Having a fake badge was worse than having Mrs. Green silk. I took the badge and I studied it. It was a small square of copper with a hole poked through the top so you could pin it to your dress. It was carved with words. I sounded them out till it finally came clear what I was saying. "Domestic. Domestic servant." "Domestic servant?" I cried. "Number 133, year 1805. Where'd you get this?" "Well, I ain't been out there grogging and lazying around this whole time. I've been finding work for myself." "But you got more work here than we can see to." "And I don't make nothing from it, do I?" She took the badge from me and dropped it back in her pocket. One of the Russell slaves, named Tom, has his own blacksmith shop on East Bay. Mrs. Russell let him work for hire all day, and she don't take but 3/4 of what he make. He made this badge for me, copied it off a real one. I had the mind of an 11-year-old, but I knew right off this blacksmith wasn't just some nice man doing her a favor. Why was he putting himself in danger to make a fake badge for her? She said, I'm going to be making bonnets and dresses and quilts for a lady on Queen Street, Mrs. Allen. I told her my name was Pearl, and I belonged to Master Dupree on the corner of George and East Bay. She said to me, you mean that French tailor? I say, yes'm. He can't fill my time no more with work, so he letting me out for hire. What if she checks on your story? She an old widow. She ain't gonna check. She just say, show me your badge. Mama was proud of her badge and proud of herself. Mrs. Allen say she paying me by the garment, and her two daughters need clothes and covering for their children. How you gonna get all this extra work done? I got you. I got all the hours of the night. Mama burned so many candles working in the dark, she took to swiping them from whatever room she happened on. Her eyes grew down to squints, and the skin around them wrinkled like drawing a straight stitch. She was tired and frayed, but she seemed better off inside. She brought home money and stuffed it inside the gunny sack, and I helped her sew day and night. Anytime I didn't have duties drawing Miss Sarah's baths, cleaning her room, keeping up with her clothes and her privy pot. When we got the widow's orders done, Mama would squirm out the window and carry the parcels to her door where she got more fabric for the next batch. Then she would wait till dark and sneak over the back gate. All this dangerous business got natural as the day was long. One afternoon, during a real warm spell in January, Mrs. sent Cindy to the basement to fetch Mama. Something about rosettes falling off her new Empire waist dress, and, of course, Mama was gone over the wall. She didn't lock the door while she was out, because she knew Mrs. would have Prince saw the door off its hinges if she didn't answer. And how was she going to explain an empty room behind a locked door? News of a missing slave flies like brush fire. When I heard the news, my heart dropped to my knees. Mrs. used her bell and gathered everybody in the yard up near the back door. She laid her hands on top of her big pregnant belly and said, if you know Charlotte's whereabouts, you are duty-bound to tell me. Not a peep from anybody. Mrs. cast her eyes on me. Hetty, where is your mother? I shrugged and acted stumped. I don't know, Mrs. Wish I did know. Mrs. told Tomfrey to search the kitchen house, laundry, carriage house, stable, storage shed, privy, and slave rooms. She said comb every nook in the yard, look down the chute where Prince sent hay from the loft to the horse's trough. If that didn't turn up Mama, she said Tomfrey would go through the house, the piazza, and the ornament garden top to bottom. She rang her bell, which meant go back to work. I hurried to Mama's room to check the gunny sack. All her money was still at the bottom under the stuffing. Then I crept back outside and set the pail next to the cistern. The sun was coming down the sky, turning it the color of apricots. While Tomfrey did his searching high and low, I took up my spot in the front alcove on the second floor to wait. At the first shade of dark, lo and behold, I looked down through the window, and there was Mama turning the corner. She marched straight to the front door and knocked. I tore down the stairs and got to the door the same time as Tomfrey. When he opened it, Mama said, I gonna give you half of a dollar if you get me back in there safe. You owe me, Tomfrey. He stepped out onto the landing, me beside him, and closed the door. I threw my arms around Mama. She said to him, quick now, what it gonna be? They ain't nowhere to put you, he said. Mrs. had me search every corner. Not the rooftop, I said. Tomfrey made the coast clear, and I led Mama to the attic and showed her the ladder and the hatch. I said, when they come, you say it was so warm you came out here to see the harbor and lay down and fell asleep. Meanwhile, Tomfrey went and explained to Mrs. how he forgot about the rooftop when he was searching, how he knew for a fact Charlotte had been up there one time before. Mrs. waited at the foot of the attic steps with her cane, huffing from climbing the stairs, big as she was. I lurked behind her. I was trembling with nerves. Mama came down the ladder, shivering, telling this cockamamie story I'd come up with. Missus said, "I did not think you were as naturally dumb as the rest, Charlotte, but you have proved me wrong. To fall asleep on the roof. You could have rolled off onto the street, the roof. You must know such a place is completely off limits." She raised her cane and brought it down across the back of Mama's head. "See yourself to your room, and tomorrow morning after devotions, you are to sew the rosettes back on my new dress. Your sloppiness with the needle has only worsened." "Yes'm," Mama said, hurrying to the stairs, waving me in front of her. If Mrs. noticed how Mama didn't have her cane or her limp,